And they'll know we are Christians by our love, yes, they'll know we are Christians by the way we confront each other's offenses. Doesn't sing so well, does it? Not going to move a lot of albums that way. But as every sibling knows, if offenses are not confronted, is there love between brothers and sisters? Matthew 18 is a very interesting conglomeration of subjects. It begins with the question of who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven, Jesus' admonition not to cause stumbling, and the parable of the lost sheep. It continues with sin between Christians and binding and loosing, which Jim Garrett has translated very well recently, and the agreeing of two or three in Jesus' name. And finally, it ends with forgiving 70 times 7 and the parable of the unmerciful servant. Covers a lot of ground. The themes in these examples are primarily admonitions to put others ahead of yourself, encouragement to trust in God and His love for us, and a warning to remember the mercy He shows to us so that we may show it to others. Now, all of these are fairly expected themes. They're not new additions to God's character, not even in the first book of the New Testament. But right in the middle is this series of legal procedural steps, as if they were taken straight from a court case reference. They lay out the godly way to address fellow Christians who sin against other Christians. Does such a thing happen? Shock and awe. When Christians sin against other Christians, that can get ugly real fast. Ever been offended by a believer? You don't have to raise your hand. Ever been betrayed by a brother or sister? It happens. We don't like to talk about it. It seems to reflect very poorly on our Lord's example. And it causes awkward relations between parts of the same body. But it's not new, and it's possible to address and resolve. We can help ourselves by understanding why it may feel so bad, so awkward, and so unexpected when it happens. Now, in the first place, the world and many Christians have this expectation that Christians are always better behaved than anyone else. That would be nice. But we all know it's not true. Just go driving, right? Many of us come to Christ precisely because we have been so terribly behaved for many years. And old habits die hard. And even after coming to Christ, we are still subject to our common human nature. All have sinned. Now, the world does have the right to expect our lives to change as a result of our relationship with Jesus Christ. But not everyone starts in the same place with the same raw materials of life, the same upbringing, or the same training. So it would be unrealistic to expect all Christians to be better behaved than all non-believers, even for a single moment in time. Christians should be improving in our behavior, but some of us have a longer way to go in some very visible ways. And all of us continue to fall short, just as all non-believers continue to fall short. Just because a particular non-believer is nicer to be around than a particular Christian at a particular moment does not make the whole of Christianity invalid. Let us not judge a group by the worst example we can find. That is dishonest. So we find that we must guard against the idea that someone will be nice to us just because they attend a church and confess Christ as Savior. We ourselves are not always nice to those we love, are we? If we are honest, we must admit that we sometimes exhibit our worst behavior toward the people we claim to love the most. Familiarity can breed contempt. We can be the most unchristian in the place where others might expect us to be most like Christ. Ever sinned in church? If we ourselves can be so unreasonably difficult, should we not make room in our expectations for our brothers and sisters to be the same? Jesus admonished us about specks and logs, didn't he? This is where that applies. The next thing to bear in mind is that if we have to make room for this possibility, we must also follow a godly procedure for this possibility. If we cannot resolve offenses with our brethren, we are forced either to burn with frustration or lash out at fellow believers or start a new denomination. Since all of these options are questionable at best, we need direction from God Himself about how to interact with fellow children of God this side of heaven. And this is exactly what verses 15 through 17 of Matthew chapter 18 provide. Because God's not surprised by our treatment of each other. Remember how the disciples treated each other? I thought the series The Chosen did a very good job of showing all the very believable bickering that happened between the disciples, especially early on. The resentment, the misunderstanding. Not abnormal. Remember the factions in the early church? The people that wanted to make everyone follow the Mosaic law, and how it was still a brand new idea to the Jerusalem church that Gentiles could be saved? Remember how Jesus had to continually remind his disciples how to act, what to expect, that God's plans and ideas were so different from what they had always been told to expect. God is not surprised by our sinful nature rearing its ugly head. We should not be either. This is not heaven. This is still a fallen world. So Matthew chapter 18, starting in verse 15. If your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he hears you, you have gained your brother. But if he will not hear, take with you one or two more, that by the mouth of two or three witnesses every word may be established. And if he refuses to hear them, tell it to the church. But if he refuses even to hear the church, let him be to you like a heathen and a tax collector. Jesus was fairly merciful to most of the tax collectors that the Bible mentions. But I don't think that's what he's talking about here. Jesus makes things very plain. That does not make them easy. The first step in this process, the step that must be taken before any of the others are allowed, involves face-to-face confrontation and clear articulation. And it requires humility and privacy between the two parties involved only. This flies in the face of our pop culture. There's no place here for posting comments anywhere, online or otherwise. It must be kept between the two involved parties only, unless there is further disagreement and escalation is the legally allowed next step. There is no allowance made for bringing up the matter in the presence of those you know will support you. We are not given the option to feel safe when we confront the offender by having a favorable audience, or indeed an audience of any kind, not even necessarily a prayer partner. Discretion is a lost art in our digital culture, where every reaction is expressed violently and important intensely for about 3 seconds, and then is never expected to matter again after that. But it does. There is no allowance of any kind for communicating in any way to any third party before communicating with the offending party. Our offenses are to be, for lack of an excuse to say differently, secret. Secret. Keep the secret of others' offenses toward you until you can speak privately with them and hear their side and gain understanding about what was meant and how it was taken. This is not normal behavior, even for most of us experienced Christians, is it? We are directed to behave as we would like others to behave toward us when we offend. Because we will. How many of you are hard to live with? Get those hands up, every one of them. You are hard to live with sometimes, and so am I. We will offend. And when we offend, do we want the offended party to post nasty comments and whisper false characterizations or write us off? Do we not rather want them to come to us privately so that we may have the chance to explain, to apologize, to humble ourselves privately before we feel we must defend ourselves publicly? Let's not push that button. But if that is what we want, we must give the same chance to others. We must make the same allowances for others. We must find the courage to ask others privately so that they may have the chance to explain. For if we do not give that chance to others, it will not be given to us. Others will know us only by the misunderstood feelings that are offended by any of our single acts. How horrible would it be for us to punish one another in this way? Talking of punishment, we are not allowed to punish ourselves by never confronting a brother or sister. We may pass over offenses and forgive them if they will not give us an audience. But we are directed to go to them. As difficult, nerve-wracking, and emotionally risky as that feels when they sin against us. Jesus does not let us off from confrontation. We are all to be known for standing up for right behavior and standing against wrong behavior. Even when it means looking a person in the eye and telling them it looks like they did the wrong thing, and would they please explain? We don't have a problem going to the service desk at Walmart for this kind of thing, do we? When we're overcharged, or the wrong item is delivered, or the driver cuts us off, we do not hesitate to initiate conversation regarding the offense. Thankfully, other drivers are not able to join in, or there would be pitched battle on the highways. But my point is that we do not hold back from confrontation in other areas of life with non-believers because we trust the system. We expect them to expect us to confront them when problems arise. And both we and they expect such problems. we know confrontation is necessary and effective. Can we not adopt the same attitude with believers? Can we all decide to expect Christians to make mistakes, to be sometimes sloppy and lazy, emotional and difficult, ignorant and greedy, to need confronting, and to be willing to accept it when we need it? Death to self. Radical, you say? Listen, people of God, we didn't write this book. We didn't create this system of beliefs. We are not the ones who have all the answers. And we don't need to have all the answers. We are people who choose to trust in a God who can do more than we can do, who loves us more than we can love, and who is so good he defines goodness for all other creatures. We are not the standard for the rules by which we live. Jesus is the standard. Therefore, his mercy, his patience, and his confronting are also our standards. We are not allowed to ignore evil because Jesus did not ignore evil. We are not allowed to pretend evil things are good because Jesus made no such pretense. We are not allowed to lie to ourselves about our thoughts and motives because Jesus resisted every demonic temptation his whole life and died in innocence for a guilty, gutless world. He calls us to confront each other's sin. Let us not draw back to destruction. Let us press on to our mutual sanctification. But wait, there's more. Call right now and get the matching set of steak knives absolutely free. Only 57 easy payments of $19.95. In addition to our own obligations for our own offenses, we are given principles here for the offenses of those we love. Matthew 18 warns against taking up secondhand offenses. This is different from the man who was let down through the roof by his friends. Remember, Jesus healed him and forgave him because of his friend's faith. There's no offense there. This is not a defense of the lame man after Jesus refused to heal him. This is a request because the man himself could not make the request due to his need. But if a person can make the required confrontation themselves, they should. If the request is denied, the person themselves should take the next step. Because if the cause is escalated, an advocate starts being brought in, and then there's no going back to innocence, the simple relationship of two in private. Now lines get drawn and sides get chosen in a clearly adversarial and public relationship. Again, this is how some denominations are created. Jesus admonishes us to agree quickly with our adversary while events are still up in the air, before we get to the judge and have to go on public record with accusations and evidence. Hard to forget something like that. Let us hesitate to push offenses to this level until we have exhausted all the private, secret options, until we have given every chance to another that we would want given to us. Is the offense more valuable than the friendship? We should ask that question. We should answer it thoroughly before taking any steps to escalate. If we must escalate, we should do so with confidence that all has been done to settle it privately, if at all possible, and that we are only doing this because the other party insists on it. parenting will force you to public confrontation. And I was one of the worst at forcing my parents to do so. I got spanked in the store. I got spanked at church. I got spanked in front of the relatives on Christmas Day. Yeah, that was me. I was that kid. I think it mostly did some good. But your kids don't come up and say, "Hey, Dad, is now a good time to be disruptive? I know you care about what these people think, but what if I do something horrible in front of them? Is that okay? You ready? Hey, Mom, have you saved up enough to replace that expensive thing? Because I'm about to break it." Kids do not wait for you to be ready. And we are all guilty, aren't we? Ever had to spank a child in front of a group of strangers? Gold stars for courage. The best kind of parenting is also the hardest. It requires that the parent address wrong behavior immediately. Sometimes publicly. Sometimes in the embarrassing presence of other parents. But it also requires sometimes stepping back and allowing our children to suffer the consequences of their own actions, to learn from the struggle, to throw a fit and gain nothing by doing so. It's hard to do when our hearts are connected to the person suffering. But if we refuse to let the pain of learning do its work, if we step in to help by making things easier for us, which is usually our motive, then we short-circuit the growth God intends by the hard thing our child is struggling with. It is the same with offenses, both the need to address and the need to refrain from rescuing someone else who needs to address an offense. This is especially tempting for parents and leaders. Our impulse to rescue must be checked by the Spirit. God uses suffering to great effectiveness. If we take up the causes and the feelings and offenses of our friends and family without checking with God first, who's the only one who knows both sides of every argument and offense, then we will surely blunder into the trap of interfering with those offenses God uses to challenge, to change, and to bless those offended in ways we could never do by affirming their offense. Let us be careful with our support. Let us be careful with our interference. Let us be careful with our help, or we will cause the need for stronger suffering down the road. Let us be led by the Spirit and not by emotional comfort. Let us embrace the discomfort of divine suffering, even suffering for those we love, for that is what Christ did, didn't he? God does not remove every discomfort from our lives. He uses each one for our good. God works all things together for our good, which means he is using the discomfort of others for good in their lives too. If we try to jump between someone and their trouble, we might be helping, but we might be causing a bigger problem. Let us be led by the Spirit. Some offenses are from the enemy. God will use them to make us like himself. Some offenses are contrived by those offended and must be left alone. God, again, will use these to make others like himself. Some offenses are accidental but must be addressed. We must confront them privately. God gives us directions for all these situations. We need only ask him for courage and patience and wisdom. He will certainly provide them. In addition to the taking of offenses and the taking up of others' offenses, we are also challenged by the communicating of others' offenses. Matthew 18's admonishment to secrecy and discretion is often ignored. A gentle word turns away wrath, but it's more fun to stir up a crowd and get some attention, isn't it? Paul admonishes us to mind our own business, but it's more fun to gossip about what someone may have done and get excited about what might happen, isn't it? Are we so out of touch with the suffering of our friends and family that we seek to spend time chewing through the imagined dramas of strangers? Are we seasoned ticket holders for the emotional gladiator arena of public gossip? Celebrities are people too, just like Christians. And when does the media, who's feeding us these things, ever tell us the whole story? How can any of us know the whole story about someone else's offenses? And do we want other people to know the whole story about us when they get offended? We are so human sometimes. God is God. He decrees that we are to begin with forgiveness, discretion, courage, and humility, and a willingness to be wrong in our initial reaction to what we don't like. It's not comfortable. It's not easy or fun or exciting. But it's right. And it's exactly what we would like others to do to us. This is the golden rule: to be to others what perhaps others have not been to us, so we may change the direction of the destructive desires of the world, the flesh, and our enemy. If your brother sins against you, go and speak to him alone. How much drama, hassle, and broken relationships could be avoided by following this one command? Let's find out, you and me. Let's be content not to know everything that catches our attention. Let's be careful to put our attention on God first and let Him direct us from there. Let's be sure, if we're using our imaginations, that we're using them to see things through the eyes, values, and feelings of one another before we get too excited. Least said, soonest mended. The less we let our imaginations and feelings lead us, and the more we listen for the Spirit, the better off we shall surely be. Jesus said to seek first His kingdom and His righteousness. And He did not hesitate to confront Peter, James, John, Martha, Pilate, the Pharisees, and others when it was right to do so. But how many weaknesses and mistakes did Jesus leave unaddressed publicly? Did He see all the sins everyone was committing? He knew. Think about what He could have said, could have done, instead of the grace and mercy that He showed. He is so gentle and so firm. His word guides us to be the same, even with the offenses of our closest allies. There is room at the cross, even for this. You want to join me? Find out what it's like?